I'm Alexia Ridley with Athens News Matters, a show dedicated to local news, current events, and community outreach efforts. Today, my guests discuss area candidates qualifying for local and state races, approval of the Episcopal House, the City of Winterville's tough new tobacco measure, and a solar array planned for Cedar Creek. Those topics and more next on Athens News Matters. Hello, I'm Alexia Ridley, host of Athens News Matters. My guests today are Blake Odd with Flagpole, Gwen O'Looney with WXAG, and District 6 Commissioner Jerry Neesmith. So, of course, everyone, thank you for joining me and welcome.
Thank you.
Okay.
We'll jump right to politics since that is just really at the forefront right now. People qualifying this week, of course, qualifying will be over when the show airs, but there are a lot of early birds so far.
Right.
Well, usually the first day and the last day are the busiest days, and the first day is, you know, probably when most people come in and do it, but, you know, the last day might be, we might get some surprises. You never know, so.
You never know. I think I expect surprises.
you know, you never know what's coming. You know there's going to be something. You just don't know what it is. So,
right.
But we'll have it. We'll have it all updated on the Flagpole website, or you can go to the Secretary of State's website and see for yourself who all has qualified. And ended at noon today, Friday. So, and right now, as of Wednesday afternoon, most of the people who've qualified so far have been the people we've been talking about for a while. Kelly Gertz and Harry Sims for mayor, Sharon Dickerson, the incumbent, and Patrick Davenport in District 1, Taylor Pass and Mariah Parker in District 2. Mariah was kind of
Mariah's
a late entry.
Mariah's a surprise, yes.
She really just
Valentine.
Announced about a week or two ago she was running Tommy Valentine's campaign in District 9, and she is probably better known as a rapper who goes by the name Lingua Franca, who's become pretty popular here in town over the past year or so. So,
and she's a UGA doctoral candidate, I believe.
In linguistics. That's right. Yeah.
Linguistics.
So,
we've got a former football player, kind of a celebrity in East Athens, and then Mariah is also a celebrity in a way. I think that's interesting. Yeah.
That'll be an interesting race, I think, because Taylor Pass, I guess, has very deep roots in the community, and you know, they're going to be definitely criticizing Mariah, I think, for, you know, having only lived in the district for, I think, 6 years or something like that. So that's kind of going to be.
Yeah, and East Athens Friendship, you know, East Friendship Baptist Church is a huge political force. That's been Harry's church for years, and I think Taylor was kind of a selected. He has a very sophisticated website, so he's really got a good head start, and I kind of feel a lot of sympathy for people like him. He's not a talker. He's not a person that wants to be in front.
Well,
really.
Why would you go into politics?
Well, I know, but because I think he cares. I mean, I think he is coming back home. When you read the website, it's filled with East Athens, you know, with East Athens. And Mariah is an activist who really cares so much. Progress for the people is her only thing that she's got. You know, I think that, and she's just getting started. We won't know, you know, because she's just, but it's going to be I agree with you. It's going to be a very interesting race. This is a huge change for that community after how many years, over 20?
25 years of Harry Sims, right. Well, then you go on to District 3, where we have Melissa Link and Tony Eubanks. And in 5, we have 3 candidates. We have Jared Bailey, Tim Denson, and Danielle Benson. And we also have 3 candidates in 7. Bill Overend, and who announced a few, 3-4 weeks ago, probably. And
right.
Russell Edwards has been.
Yet,
he has.
Yeah.
He has.
Oh, he has now?
I believe so,
he did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's worth saying. In District 5, Jared is fighting an old problem, and that is that there are still rumors, and speaking as fact, that he does not live in the district. The fact is he does live in the district. He did have a pretty major change in life a little while ago, where he did have a relationship in Oconee County.
His wife.
Right. Well, he's no longer there.
I know.
He lives in the district, and I don't want that to be a factor in this race because it's a canard. It's just not true.
Right.
Well, and he kept his residency the whole time, and
yeah, he did. And
he was never in violation of
no.
Anything.
There were people that actually looked hard at that, and
yeah.
with the law,
well, I was
and
one
everything.
Of them. Yeah.
And the fact mm-hmm. was, he was a legal resident.
Right. I asked
but
that
now
question.
He is a for in fact resident full
right.
time in,
right.
in his district.
Right.
So that's not a reason not to vote for Jared.
And then in 7 we have Carl Blunt, who is a new candidate who's joined the race. And I don't believe Commissioner Bell is running for a re-election. Is that right, Jerry?
I think that's true, yes.
Okay. So that's another 3-way race in 7. And then in 9, Tommy Valentine, I think, is the only candidate who qualified as of this taping. But Ovita Thornton, I'm sure by the time people are listening to this, will have officially qualified.
It's going to be an interesting race.
Right. And did you mention Richie Knight?
He hasn't officially qualified yet. I mean, I know I have no reason to think Richie won't. I mean, I've seen him out campaigning
last
weekend.
Yeah, and I've seen his yard signs.
So, you know.
Right. Yeah.
But officially as of taping time,
but we're
time,
talking about
he
who's
had
official.
Not qualified.
Who's actually ponied up and has gotten on the ballot.
Right.
So
I expect to see more names, of course.
There will be more names next week. You know, the people were – it's not – strictly limited to the people we're talking about necessarily at this point, but mm-hmm. And we have a couple surprises in the legislature, I guess. One in particular, we have a candidate who's running against Bill Cowsert in the state senate, mm-hmm. right, Gwen?
Mary Sue Hilliard, who was with the U.S. National Forest Service. She had a very high, you know, directorship level job. And received a lot of awards there. And when she retired, she got involved with the Moms Demand Action Group. And I think that has just grown with her to see, to be in the legislature, to try to get Mr. Cowsert to talk to him, to, you know, go down there and see what they're not willing to do and what is needed. I think was her motivation, and I'm really glad to see that. That's an excellent candidate. We'll see. There's a lot of he has a huge amount of money, but he's really not spent very much time in the district. He's been kind of he likes Atlanta. He does.
Well, he's run unopposed for a while.
Oh, yeah.
I think the last time somebody ran against him was 2010.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's a very, very red district. I mean, that's got it's about probably two-thirds of Clark County, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But then it also has Oconee County, and it has most of Walton County. And Walton County is very red. Walton County is about 80% Republican, and it's about the same size. He has most of Walton. And it's about the same size as Clark County, and it's about 80% Republican. So you can see how Walton and Oconee together would easily more than cancel out any Clark County's vote, although Bill is from Clark County.
Right.
So
it'll be interesting to see how much overlap there is with Deborah Gonzalez and Anthony Wallace and their efforts.
Jonathan Wallace,
I'm sorry. And bringing them, you know, whether that helps bring out.
Well, the key for any of this is going to be turnout, you know. I mean, these historically, they're all red districts. And, of course, Jonathan and Deborah were able to win upsets in special elections. But, you know, who turns out in a special election is not always the same as who turns out in a regular November. That's much more predictable. So,
right. It's not, you know, this May, though, is very important because it really is our determination of who's going to be our commissioners, our local Athens, Clark County people. And
That's the May election, though.
That's what I just said.
Right.
May,
yeah,
this May is going to be so important.
Yeah.
And to raise the visibility of this election is very, very important. And, Jerry, I was going to ask you, I feel that it's really important that our new candidates carry those things that are complementary to good government. What do you think the commission needs right now? What are you seeing?
Well, you know, it's really hard to say what the commission needs, but bringing on newly elected commissioners can be a very disruptive thing, mostly because they don't know the business in general. They don't know the business of county government. They don't know the budget process. They don't know the long-range planning. They don't know what the departments do. Some of the commissioners were talking about this the other night, trying to figure out a way to educate them after they're elected and before they're sworn in. And we're working on some ideas of, as it is now, you get one day of education. You sit down and the department heads come in and tell you about them, and that's it. And being one who did that, 6 years ago, and I was involved already, but it's very hard to figure out what's going on. And it does disrupt the business of the government, especially when we could have four new ones possibly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Five.
We could have five.
And the mayor.
And a new mayor.
Yeah.
So it could be painful for the government to move through this.
Actually, six.
With the mayor.
Oh yeah, Harry. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Could be a new mayor and six new commissioners potentially,
Potentially.
You know, the thing, and a lot of the candidates who are running, they're young candidates. They're very progressive and they have a lot of ideas.
Yeah.
The thing though is that it's not easy to translate your ideas into actual policy.
No,
and having seen a lot of new commissioners be sworn in and go to work, there always is a knowledge gap there.
Yeah.
And once you start actually digging into the budget, you can have the best ideas in the world, but if you can't find the money to pay for them.
If you have good ideas about new things you want to do, but you got to come up with things you want to get rid of, too.
And it's a very lean budget. It is a very, very, very lean budget.
Oh, yeah. That's because they've not been willing to look at revenue sources. But one of the things that concerns me is that there's been a lot of schism in the last couple of years, it seems, and separation and a frustration maybe not being able to get as much done or new things started or initiatives. And I don't think that we're going to have I think there's going to be a much more positive approach to including new ideas on the agenda than there's been in the past. And I think that's really important. But all of the, to run, you have to be a courageous kind of independent person. And that sometimes does not jive well with being a group collaborator and a builder of a team. And that, to me, is very important that as they come in, as effective as they might have been individually, that they really look at the importance of becoming a part of the group. Because that's the most effective way to get something done, especially with a staff as ingrained as ours is.
One interesting thing I think that this about this election that I haven't seen in others is that you really almost have a slate running.
Yeah.
Where you look at Davenport, Parker, Link, Denson in five, Edwards in seven, nine. I think this group could probably go either way with the candidates in nine, but they're almost running as a slate together.
Yeah.
They have almost identical platforms. They actually all qualified together on Monday, which, and I've never seen, candidates who are running for office really endorse each other, in this way before, because usually everyone wants to run their own race. You can only really get yourself in trouble really getting into somebody else's race, but I've.
Yeah. It's a little bit disturbing to me. It reminds me of when the Chamber of Commerce years ago did a similar thing where they were grading the commissioners, grading the mayor, and
now Athens Grow Green and other people were doing that too back then.
So. Yeah,
but now
we have Athens for Everyone doing it, and
anti-discrimination movement.
And Athens for Everyone, their grading system is really, it's really subjective.
I didn't understand some of those grades.
No, yeah. I didn't either.
Well, what did they give you, Jerry? A C minus?
C.
C?
I think it was a C. Because I don't support complete streets. The hell I don't.
Uh-huh. Right. Well,
I think you've been a progressive commissioner on pretty much everything except, Atlanta highway issues maybe. But as far as complete streets go, you know, and making Atlanta Highway a complete street, I don't know.
Oh, I would love it's to a tall make order, but Highway a complete street. But we have other things we need to do on Atlanta Highway, and we, you know, there's only so much energy and so much money.
But you know, Gwinnett had that.
Plus, Atlanta Highway is a state road. We can't put sidewalks on Atlanta Highway. Well, we could.
But you could.
Prince Avenue.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like Prince Avenue. But I was just going to say real quickly that Gwinnett had this happen a number of years ago where a group ran with the same goals pretty much and came in. There were four or five. One of them was a young man that had been in Athens, and so I was aware about it. And it was really interesting because they really embraced the former commissioners, the ones in place, and really took the time to sit down with them and talk about it. And together they forged a really strong coalition of the commission and moved forward with very little fractures or schisms. And I'm always an optimist, I think, because I believe in people. And if people will relate to each other as people, we share the same goals. And so I hope that that's not a negative thing. I hope it can be a positive thing if it happens.
Well, the commission that we have now is pretty collegial. We're working very well together for the most part. And we've accomplished some things. I won't go through the list, but, you know, buses, solar arrays. I mean, these are all very unanimous, highly supported things. We are working together very well these days.
And maybe they don't get the attention they deserve because they are kind of unanimous things.
Yeah.
Like the solar arrays that were passed on Tuesday. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's
4.3 gigawatts of power at Cedar Creek water processing, which is over 40% of the energy used at that plant. Interesting statistic, the power that's consumed in our water treatment plants is about five times higher than all the other power we as a government use.
Mm-hmm.
So those are very expensive plants. This is
What kind of a difference will the array make, Jerry?
About 40% of that plant will be covered with that, yeah.
And this is, what, something like $18,000 worth of power or something?
Well, I don't know the numbers, yeah. You know, if Georgia Power is going to pay us to give them the energy, so. Yeah.
Well, I did have a question about that, though, actually. I don't understand why. I mean, Georgia Power, I know, pays a very low rate for power that's generated by solar panels when you put it onto the grid. So why would it be advantageous for, and I know according to the numbers it would be, you know, that were in the agenda report, but I don't understand why it would be more advantageous to sell the power to Georgia Power rather than just use it yourself.
I wish I could answer that question. I can't.
I think it's, at least in homes, it's that it's extra power that comes in at a time when they can't use it. And so they sell
that's usually the way that it works.
Surplus
at homes. Yeah,
power.
But that's not the way that it's working here.
Oh, it's not working that
There's
way.
The recommendation, I believe, is to sell all of the power to Georgia Power.
Yes, it is.
Is that because they don't want an unsteady? They don't want any kind of.
Well, we have to use Georgia Power because there's times we need energy 24/7. I think that's probably a big part of it is we're using their power. So we're just putting this energy on the grid. We're not using it. We're putting it on the grid, and they're paying us for it.
But if you used it and that reduced your power bill, I would think that it would reduce your power bill more than
$18,000.
More than selling it to Georgia Power and then buying it back. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll have an answer for you next time.
Okay.
I wondered when we built College Station why we did not do more solar. And I know we're reclaiming 90% of our water, which is really great. Mm-hmm. There are many kudos but I was just curious about that it had no.
Yeah, I wasn't around then, but I remember watching the discussions on television, and it was never discussed. I think the plant is so expensive And they were what they were mainly after was putting in the best technology.
That's why I wondered why it wasn't solar. Because, but anyway, yeah.
Well, I think the solar technology has improved quite a bit in the past 7 years or whatever.
Yeah, it's been down by 75%.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're going to get this. You're going to buy these panels before the tariff kicks in, right?
Yeah. And, we asked that question. Well, they said they had them. So
that could definitely make a difference.
Yeah.
And I guess we can move on to Winterville with their proposed tobacco measure, which is really tough. If you're not old enough to smoke now, you're not ever
going
to
be. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, we were struggling trying to explain this before the show.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. If you're not over 18 now, you would never be able to buy tobacco in Winterville because they would just keep raising the age.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, an interesting letter in.
It would be 19 next year, 20
Bryant,
year after.
Right. So it says, Blake or Gwen, either one of you, if you could just kind of explain so what they're asking or what they want.
Okay. Well, what they want is just continuously raise the minimum age to buy tobacco, so that if you were born
after 2000,
before 18 years ago today, assuming it would pass tomorrow, if you were born before March 7th. 2000, then, because the age would keep going up, then you would never be able to actually buy tobacco.
But if you're
old enough to smoke now, you would still be able to buy tobacco, but not before. So in 20 years, when you were 38, you still couldn't buy it.
Right. very adult, but you still couldn't buy it. Right.
So I don't know how much good it would do. I mean, I think there were only two or three places that sell tobacco in Winterville, and of course you could very easily go a couple miles down the road to Lexington Highway and pick some
moral statement.
Right.
Sure.
Right. But under Georgia law, it's lawful for a licensed retailer to sell tobacco products to any adult. And that's the Georgia Commissioner of Revenue is actually the one that has the authority for governing tobacco sales. And so he's the only one that can exercise jurisdiction that manner. But I think we talked a little bit about the show before the show about this, but I think it shows a spirit in Winterville and a determination to make their part of Athens-Clarke County in Georgia truly different. And it's an idealistic kind of place and approach that I think is admirable and exciting. I'm glad to have them as a part of Athens-Clarke County.
Maybe we could do the same thing with AR-15s.
Uh-huh.
Let's let Winterville lay the foundation, and then we can piggyback
from there. Yeah,
right.
See if this is legal. Right.
And also, the Episcopal House has been approved. So we will have some more dorm rooms on Lumpkin.
Yeah, that was quite a feat. They withdrew their application just before the vote the last time. UGA was dead set against it. There were lots of traffic issues coming off onto and off of Lumpkin. The building was very close to the right-of-way. It wasn't a very attractive building. Well, they went back to the drawing board and completely redesigned it and came up with an agreement with UGA and the Board of Regents to use, University Court, that street beside.
I believe so, yeah.
They came up to an agreement that they could use University Court as one of the entrances, and there will only be right turns into and out of the development off of Lumpkin Street. And it passed unanimously and with UGA support.
That is a total turnaround.
Total.
I mean, the whole thing.
It really is. I think they kind of recognize the value of expanding their housing through other partners rather than, because they've really backed off of real estate moves, any kind of expansion. And so, but they have the need for that. And they really are doing a good job of keeping cars down.
They haven't built any student housing in probably about 10 years, I don't think.
But. Right. More than that, maybe.
Well, the last
probably
one
longer
was
East Campus Village.
East Campus Village, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So probably 15 years, but
yeah,
but they're, about 15.
But they're growing, you know. I mean, and they say that they're not, but I mean, every year they
enrollment
creeps up, you know, another 50, another 50, another right. 50, another 100.
And another vice president.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is. I mean, it's going up, you know, little by little, but it is going up, and that adds up, you know. I mean, over a 5-year period of time, you know, that might be another 1,000 yeah. students. So right. they've got to live somewhere.
Yeah.
And the downtown market, I think, is pretty well tapped out. So, you know, maybe this will kind of relieve.
I wouldn't say that. I think there's downtown.
You think there's going to be some more student high rises downtown?
Not for a while. Not for a long. I mean, because
well,
the market
saying,
is.
Yeah.
It's absorbed right now. Yes, I agree. But in the future, I think that Atlanta will keep looking at downtown Athens as a building site. We need to be progressive and proactive about looking at it ourselves.
We need to revisit our laws in downtown for developments, and a lot of us have been wanting to do that for years, but it doesn't show up on the agenda.
And why not?
Because it's not, it's anti-business.
Oh, right, that's what right, they say. Yeah, that's what they say.
That's right.
Is that what the mayor says? But
I know you did, Flagpole had an article on Episcopal House when it was coming out, so mm-hmm. there was a lot of kind of background we just kind of skipped over, but I know it's over 100 rooms.
I think that it's going to be 110 beds, I think.
Beds, I'm sorry.
Right. Yes. Well, that's usually the terminology that they use. Beds.
But, let's use the right terminology. I'll say
that's
that.
That's what they talk about.
It's clustered living with shared gathering space and living
right.
space.
It's more like a dorm than an apartment.
Yeah. Right.
And it's sort of geared towards, I guess, students who want to live a spiritual lifestyle, might be a good way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have on-site counseling. And,
yeah.
Right. Well, you know,
lots
the other
services.
Thing, though, is that if they stay in a position where they're non-taxable, you know, as the Episcopal Church, what is the deal on that, Jerry?
Well, we asked the mayor that last
night. I think they are taxable, aren't they?
I believe they are taxable. They're running a business.
Yeah.
They will be.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, Christian College, it used to be up on North Campus off of Lumpkin, right there near the KA house. They, for years, did not pay taxes, and it took me, who I was called a non-Christian, to say, you know, wait a minute, you know, and that was a business. They were renting to people that
yes.
never heard of the Christian College.
Yeah.
They were just.
Yeah, and they can't limit their boarders, their tenants, to a religious reason.
So it will be taxable. Well, that'll be a great improvement over the current situation.
Because it's currently not taxable because
yes.
it's a church.
Right. It's a church. Right.
But if a church is running, and I think Athens Clark County was actually involved in a lawsuit about this many years
Christian
ago.
College.
It could have been, yeah.
It was Christian College.
But the ruling was that if it's a commercial enterprise, even if it's a nonprofit, for example, like a thrift store or something like that, then it was taxable. So
yeah.
I think this would fall under that.
Property taxes.
That'll be the last word for today. I want to thank my guests, Gwen O'Looney, Blake Odd, and Commissioner Jerry Neesmith. To hear this show again, visit WUGA.org for podcasts. For questions or comments, visit our Facebook page. This show does not reflect the views of the station, WXAG, or Flagpole. Athens News Matters is a production of WUGA, a broadcast service of the University of Georgia. I'm Alexia Ridley.